Wilson versus Empress Healthcare.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please, the court. I'm Tom Burke for the appellant, Gene Hawkins. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes. We are before the court because of an unfortunate set of circumstances involving a settlement and release agreement. And the background facts that got us here are some altered medical records that were provided to my client during the course of litigation against Talbot. Those records were subsequently used
Can
in the settlement.
A couple of questions about that. My understanding is that during the litigation against Talbot, there was a request for production to Talbot to produce medical records, and the response was, "We've already produced them."
That's correct. So the plaintiff has a.
Was that a signed discovery response?
Yes, sir.
Signed by counsel.
Signed by counsel and by the representative of the party, Sandra Shook.
Did it have the typical CR 26 certification that generally is required of counsel?
It does, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So we are looking at the effect of this set of circumstances on whether or not a release that was negotiated as and part of the settlement of that case should be applied to the action that we brought when we discovered that there had been altered medical records. It's, I think, a really prime distinction that we have not just a set of medical records from my client that had been altered in some way and been relied on and moved on through her treatment and care. What we have were a distinct set of medical records that were kept by Talbot, provided to subsequent counsel in a later litigation against the treating doctor, and were verified by my client when she went to their facility after we discovered all this and compared what was given to her with the official record.
At the trial court proceedings in this case, was there any dispute that the record had been altered?
No, sir. Well, I'll take that back. I believe counsel denied that they had been altered and phrased it as an edit that had not been corrected.
Let me phrase it differently. Alter has some pejorative connotation, perhaps. Was there any dispute that the records given to your client and then ratified essentially in the discovery response were different than the records produced in the litigation involving the doctor?
No, sir.
And was there any dispute that someone had done something to the records to cause there to be that difference?
There was no dispute on the fact that somebody had changed the records, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Are you suggesting that the hospital, there were two sets of records? There was the records that you got, and another set of records that were maintained, both?
Yes, distinction I'm trying to emphasize here to the court.
And so the representation that you received, all of the records, was inaccurate?
Correct.
Okay.
So we move forward and brought this action that brings us here for fraud. And the trial court relied primarily on the language of the release document that had been executed, deeming that it was a general release and any and all claims for fraud, whatever, would have been included in that release. And then as a backup as well, even if the release is deemed to be a special release with a narrower scope, there was no reasonable right to reliance.
Did the trial court actually rely on that or just say if it were to reach the question, that would likely be its decision?
The trial court's language was a little bit equivocal. It said even if the release did not bar the claims because of the scope, the release was narrow. It's questionable So he's saying that whether, as a matter of law, plaintiff had a right to rely on the alleged falsifications.
The reason I ask it is whether we even reach that issue in this case, assuming we were to rule for you. The trial court has not actually yet ruled on that question, has it?
I agree that would be true, Your Honor, but I didn't want to let it go by.
I understand your concern because certainly one has a strong suggestion of what the trial court's thinking is, but it, technically we don't have that issue before us.
Correct. So is it a scenario where the release is broad and general or the release is narrow and would not apply to these facts that we have here? It's our position that these records and the circumstances around them do not fit the clear and specific language of the release document. The release says it applies to two things: claims that are based on the facts stated in the complaint. No allegation anywhere that what was stated in that personal injury complaint had anything to do with fraud, misrepresentation, records, et cetera, et cetera. And it also significantly does not say based on facts or claims raised in the first litigation. It doesn't say a thing about what causes of action may or may not have been excluded. They simply are not addressed.
Well, and the general release, it's all inclusive, generally has language along this line. Release all claims against so-and-so, including but not limited to those that may arise out of the facts alleged in the complaint. This one doesn't have any of that all claims language.
That's right, Your Honor.
And that's the basis for your argument.
Here we are.
I think we understand your argument.
Okay. Then unless the court has any additional questions, I won't take up any more time.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Estock for respondents on appeal. Firstly, to address the issue of what we admitted and contested below, Your Honor. We absolutely disputed that any records were altered, certainly intentionally or otherwise. We also dispute this notion, which is not pled.
Do you agree that there was evidence before the trial court that there was a different record given to the plaintiff and was executed by the doctor giving the instructions about the antibiotics?
No. This was not a motion with any evidence. It was a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss, which counsel consented to proceeding under that. So we were looking at the text of the complaint and the attachments.
How did the court have in front of it the language of the release?
It was attached to the complaint, therefore incorporated into it.
Let me ask you a few questions about that release. But before I do that, I want to ask you a couple of questions I find troubling. Was there a discovery response that said that the records that had been given to the plaintiff earlier were the complete records so that no additional records were produced in response to that discovery request?
My understanding, I was not counsel on the underlying action, nor is this actually in the record. There's a brief reference to this event in the complaint, and that's really all that's before the court. But as I understand it,
I don't know.
I'll give you that's my understanding of what's in the record. But here's what what I understand the facts to show is that, see, a key part of this is that the record upon which counsel relied for 2 years of litigation was obtained, I think, within 24 hours of the patient leaving.
Let me tell you what I find troubling.
Okay.
That someone is given records by a healthcare provider. Then to make sure they have the right records, they send a request for production, and the response is, we already gave you the records. And then later on, the argument is made, you shouldn't have relied upon either the records we gave you or our discovery response in deciding to settle the claim. That strikes me as extraordinarily dishonest, and I'm very troubled by it.
Well, as I understand it, the counsel for the defendants did not even have a copy of the chart.
Perhaps before he signed the certification, he should have.
I believe that the answer was simply that a copy has already been provided. To the best of the attorney's knowledge, that was the case. But certainly, the record that was in possession, that he later obtained, was the one that was in possession of defense counsel. And there was 2 years of litigation in this case in which there could have been motions to compel, depositions.
Why would you make a motion to compel if you had a set of records and somebody said those are the records under oath on behalf of Talbot and the attorney certified the attorney had done what the court rules require of the attorney? Why would you do anything more to verify that you had the full set of records?
Well, because they believe that some of these records, they believe that some of the medical records were incomplete, that they should have had more details in them. That would have been an appropriate line of inquiry if the case was moving forward in the litigation.
So you can't rely upon the sworn statement of the health care provider that the records are complete?
Well, you know, I think that it's important to note that even if, and we said this below, even if you accept all of the allegations of the plaintiff in this case, it comes back to what is the remedy being sought in this case?
It's rescission of the release and a repursuit of the claim, as I understand it.
Right. And the question of whether there could have been some kind of motion for sanctions against the attorney who did that, whether there was an ethical violation by the attorney, none of that's before the court. Right.
Okay, let me ask you some further questions about the release itself.
Yes.
Does Talbot contend that the alteration of records is something which relates to the diagnosis or treatment of Ms. Hawkins?
Absolutely.
Okay, and how does the alteration of records relate to the diagnosis of her condition?
Well, because what is a medical chart but a reflection of the care diagnosis and treatment that was given? It's the written reflection of the care. Plaintiff doesn't claim that she was physically injured by what was put or not put or what was altered in the chart.
Plaintiff claims that the chart gave Talbot employees instructions to do one thing, but that the chart that she was provided did not contain those instructions and instead contain the doctor's approval of the continued administration of the antibiotics?
Two answers to that. First of all, I do not believe that that has been pled in this case. It is our assertion that there's no allegation or assertion that the missing order that they complain about was not contained elsewhere in the chart. That's what the evidence would show had we gotten it.
Let's get back elsewhere in the chart. She asked to have the records produced, and she was told you already have the record. How do you then say it was elsewhere in the record if it's not in the record she received?
It was, Your Honor. That's my understanding. That's my point. If you look at Exhibit 2 to the petition, they attach Dr. Chen's declaration, and Exhibit 1 to his declaration was in the chart that plaintiff had. That's my understanding, and that's the one that contains that order.
Okay, and the trial court didn't decide this case on that basis.
That's right, because even if you assume that, if you assume the worst, that we in fact altered this record, plaintiff
Isn't
is still...
Isn't that what we have to do on a 12b6 motion?
I agree. And even to accepting that, plaintiff is still not entitled to the relief that she seeks in this case.
Why not?
For two reasons. She has to proceed under one of two theories, rescission, or she can affirm the contract and try to state additional claims for relief. Those are two separate rules. She asserted both in the alternative in her complaint, okay? But on the rescission claim, we assert that that was abandoned by the plaintiff and then it's not been raised as an assignment of error on appeal.
And how did she abandon it in the trial court?
Well, we argued that she could not assert rescission on two grounds. The first was this idea that reliance had not been pled, both due to the no reliance clause and that she had no right to rely. We secondarily said she had affirmed the contract by not offering to tender back the $237,000.
The trial court didn't rule on that issue.
Because in my opinion, the trial court viewed the rescission claim as abandoned. And if you look at...
What in the record, besides your opinion, tells us that?
If you go to page 31, well, first of all, at oral argument, plaintiff's counsel did not raise rescission. And then on page 31, at the very end of the transcript, the trial court was pressing the counsel on rescission and said, is there any allegation that any representation or warranty by the defendants were built into the settlement agreement? And Mr. Burke said, no, Your Honor. And my opinion was because of that response, his acknowledgement that they did not allege a representation upon which to build in a rescission claim.
I could read that as, was there a warranty in the release and settlement agreement about the accuracy of information or some other thing? which is a little different than saying somebody lied to me and caused me to sign this agreement.
But the problem is that this settlement was achieved in mediation. And so any representation, for example, that our counsel made, I wasn't there, but any representation would be barred by the mediation privilege.
Okay, that would be representations made at mediation.
Right.
But in the course of discovery, parties produce evidence. And if during the course of the discovery, they affirmatively mislead the other party as to what the facts are in the case, is it your position they can then contend that the consequences of that misrepresentation disappear through the course of a mediation and settlement agreement, unless you have a specific provision in the settlement agreement that says, if we later find out you lied to us somewhere along the way, we can still sue you?
Well, if they're going to try to rescind the contract on a fraud and inducement theory, they need to provide evidence that a false statement by my client induced them to enter the contract.
They only have to have pled it at this point, don't they?
Right, and I believe Judge Allred believed plaintiff to have abandoned that argument by admitting he has not alleged such a representation. Now, furthermore,
I've already questioned you about that. Except for the express warranty aspect of that question, what is it there that suggests to you that someone's waiving reliance upon information produced in discovery?
They have a no reliance clause in the settlement agreement. That's very strong evidence to the contrary. And then furthermore, you have this whole overlay, Your Honor, of the contract.
Help me out.
Yeah.
Where in the settlement agreement is the non-reliance provision that you say says we don't get to base our decision to accept or reject your settlement offer? We don't get to consider any of the discovery you produced.
On page 2, it says this release is executed without reliance upon any statement or representation by the parties released or their representatives concerning the nature and extent of the injuries and or damages and or legal liability, therefore.
Okay. The nature and extent of the damages doesn't relate to whether the doctor did or didn't give instructions, does it?
Sure it does, because the whole claim is that the facility was negligent in not stopping the drug. That is the overarching crux of the claim and how she claims she was injured. Whether the chart reflects that such care was given or not given is simply part and parcel of that. You know, the chart is a reflection, but it's not the reality. For example, we noted that Dr. Chen was listed as one of their expert witnesses. They could have showed him the record and talked to him, and he could have said, that's not my record, or that's different from what I remember. That's all fair game in the adversarial process.
Lying is fair game in the adversarial process.
Absolutely not.
That's what appears to have happened here.
Thank you, counsel.
Very briefly, Your Honor. With respect to the elements of this going on, it's not merely that the records were altered. It's that the records were altered, and in the course of litigation, we were told under oath that they were the accurate records, that they were complete.
The counsel has now suggested that the true record was in the records you received.
Well, that's contrary to everything that was put forward to the trial court. The complaint and the declarations demonstrated that the records were received by my client from Talbot were different than the official record that was maintained in their files and provided to counsel.
Is this a paper chart or an electronic chart?
We were only allowed to see scanned images, I'm sorry. So it would be an electronic chart that my client looked at it at Talbot. With respect to the rescission going forward with damages, from our standpoint, we never got that far. That requires fraud. I mean, those are remedies for fraud, and we had a trial court saying you don't even get to go under the release because the release is so broad it covers it. So it wasn't waived, and it was pled in the alternative in the complaint. It was raised to the trial court, but the trial court never addressed that issue. In my reply brief, I think I mentioned that.
Address the abandonment argument that we're hearing today, that the trial court considered that you had abandoned the one theory of rescission?
If the trial court did, it kept it to itself. And I certainly never said we are abandoning this. The question in my mind during that colloquy was there an express warranty in the settlement agreement? And there wasn't. So the issue of, Mr. Burke, have you abandoned this particular claim, or are you abandoning it, never came up. It just wasn't mentioned.
You've answered my question.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Unless there are any other questions, I will conclude. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you.